I think that in Buddha's time, there is no meditation center at all.
Okay.
So why do we have meditation center today?
Because we think it's a shortcut.
If there is any shortcut, shouldn't Buddha tell us before all these teachers? And can there be any shortcut if there is no understanding of this moment, from moment to moment? Otherwise, this is not the only way. But since there is no other way to directly experience the arising and falling away of this moment, rather than developing awareness and understand realities as nama or rupa, little by little.
So if you use the word watching, different people mean different things. What do you mean by it? You said something about I'm trying to get to that point of understanding these things. I wonder also whether when you talk about having the idea of getting to a certain point, it's like again,
and we are learning about what Dhamma really is. There is some confusion. There is confusion. And sometimes the usage of words are wrong.
Yes. And later on we'll use more correct words according to more correct understanding. Like there is touching many times a day, but few times when there is awareness, it is aware of hardness or the reality which experiences hardness to begin to develop understanding of the characteristic which is not self at all, because it's just a moment of an element which arises to experience hardness, not the moment of experiencing visual object, different conditions for different arising of different elements.
I think when one uses certain words, it's very helpful, or I find it very helpful to have it challenged. I remember Alan Driver was very good at challenging the words that one used, and it's very useful because it does make one reflect, or what exactly do you mean by it? And sometimes without knowing it, one might have some idea that's not quite right or something, so it can be very useful if someone says, well, what exactly do you mean by this, or what is that? And just so that one does really question
basically in dummy, you just get down to the word experience and understanding, don't you? There's not much more you can use. Sometimes you lapse into other words that might not be very appropriate. The Ivan Walsh do-it-yourself method, you know. Don't believe anybody else.
Don't do anything that someone tells you to
no,
do.
No, when I first got to Thailand, actually it was interesting because I went to university in the States and I was studying various things, and then one day had to study psychology because of the curriculum you had to go through, and I found it incredibly fascinating, the idea of studying the mind, but I totally disagreed with fully whatever they said, and then I had to leave university and go to Australia financially, so I didn't have the finances, I was doing it myself, and then came up through here 10 months later and stopped. Then I settled down with some friends in a place, happened to be two Australians, and they had some books on Dhamma, on Buddhism. And I picked them up and started to read them, and it made a lot of sense. It was funny because all my life I always felt that the answers of life were quite simple, like 1 and 1 = 2. And then when I started to read the books, it was like saying, that's it, it just said this is it. It was only the basics that started to feel, I felt comfortable with. And then I was interested to study further. So I asked around, and I was directed to Wat Pawan Nawet, because I met Mrs. Stanton, who was the ex-ambassador's wife, US ambassador's wife. And she had her problems after her husband was killed in a car accident, and she'd gone back to the States, wasn't happy, came back, and she talked with the king about her problems, and the king directed her to Wat Bawandi, where the Somdet was, and he started to teach Nama classes there, and she was attending. And then I heard about her, so I met her, and she said, come on, class, I started to study there. And then I decided to ordain, but it was during that I heard about Ajahn, who was teaching in Wat Bawandi. Went along to listen, liked some aspects, but obviously she hadn't got it right. You know, she was wrong in some place. You know. Well, I could, you know, there was
quite,
some,
she wasn't quite following the Iron Wolf school.
There was certain frustration with Westerners with Ajahn because they never seemed to be able to get all the answers. She wanted you to think too much, you know, that was her problem. anyway, so I liked a lot of what Ajahn said, but I still wanted to sort of search. So I ran off and I did all sorts of things, and I was a monk and met Alan and studied him and a little bit and back and forth and all sorts of things, up looking around. And then it was very interesting, years in 77 or something like that, I'd had this little coffee shop I'd been to, and I said, I want to get away and go and do something. And I was trying to make a choice of, should I go down to Hua Hin, where there was the monk
Kutusila.
Yeah, Kutusila was down there, and study there, or should I go to down towards Pattaya? There was a temple down there from some people involved with Ajahn Chah and meditation. And I remember standing on Sukhumvit Road. I mean, I planned to do this. I sold the place I had, everything, and I was ready to go. And I still couldn't make up my mind, which took me weeks. I was going back and forth like this, what I should do. And I was standing on Sukhumvit Road, and I actually rang my friend, and they said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I still haven't made up my mind. I wasn't quite sure if I should take the bus going to the southern terminal this way or cross over and go to the eastern terminal the other way. And then I said, oh, what the heck, I'll go to Hua Hin. And on the way down, I decided what I wanted to do, and I talked with the Sulawesi. And I stayed there for a couple of weeks or so, and I came back. And by this time, what I felt was that I'd got all this knowledge, I read all these books, I'd gone to Sri Lanka and sat down and read all the suttas, and read them right through. And when you said that about what Ajahn said, you know, better to read one sutra
with right
understanding than the whole lot without. And I thought, yeah, well, that was a good experience of reading the whole suttas without right understanding. But I read them all. I sat in Kandy and read all the suttas. You know, and then, so I'd got all this knowledge, but it's like I didn't have any, there was no headway. It was like nothing there. You know, it was all very nice. But so I came back and I
too much head.
Came back and listened to Ajahn, and all of a sudden it just went toot, 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 and started to flow.
I remember that when you came back, yeah, and started to listen, you were a different person.
Yeah. But then it all started to fall into place.
Obviously, he'd come to the conclusion he didn't know it all after all.
Oh, I knew that at that time.
Yeah, I'm in school. Yeah. I'm in school.
I remember when he first started coming to listen.
No, but it was like everything that I studied, at least, started to fall into place, and a lot of things became very clear, which was good, because and then I just kept listening, and since then it's all become vague again.
No, that's not true.
Do you think it's because they think that they understand it all and they know enough and they don't need to know anymore?
They are satisfied with the answer to the questions or doubt, that's what they want.
If the people have got the parami, they'll see the importance, surely they must see the importance of the parami.
If people have got the
parami, that they can understand the importance of developing, then people have to keep trying to understand. That's why it seems to me.
I think people suddenly feel they've heard enough and now they can just practice, but actually my experience is, of course, one sometimes feels, okay, I've heard enough for now, but actually it's often when one feels one doesn't need to hear anymore that that's when one most needs to hear more. When you think everything is fine in your life and everything's going well, that's when you really need the reminders most. And suddenly when one listens a little, you realize how much more there is to know and how useful it is to keep considering.
I think a lot of people also, they just want their conceptual ideas of things to feel comfortable, to be comfortable with them. And if they're comfortable with that and they don't want to take it any further, they don't really want to investigate reality.
The exact opposite.
That's right. Well, I don't know that it's the exact opposite. And it doesn't mean don't follow your loba, but it means while following the loba, develop more understanding.
Okay,
so
okay,
it's.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's the opposite in the sense that it's pointing out that it is loba.
It's just hard work.
Feeling pleasant or unpleasant. Feeling is feeling, just a moment.
It's a different kind of feeling. The pleasant feeling that is associated with lobha is actually restless feeling, and it doesn't last, and that's why, you know, we have such a hard time when it doesn't last. The moments of kusla, the moments of understanding, are what help us to live our life more easily. So in that sense, it's...
What do you mean for Sanuk? It's pleasant?
What, Sanuk?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, in the sense of the idea of something being pleasant, being like loba.
Kusala and understanding. More Sanuk?
I would think so, yeah.
More pleasant?
Yeah. But we don't have that much
more calm.
Time,
calm.
Yeah. Pleasant in the sense of calm.
Yeah, you know, I often find talking Dhamma that way. The pleasant just sort of comes out. You forget though, you get out, you get back home and you've got all the dosa and loka and so you sort of concentrate on the loka. This is better than your dosa.
Right. Yeah. That's what we tend to get satisfied with, isn't it? If we can get rid of the dosa,
right.
We tend not to mind the lopa so much,
yeah,
maybe.
That's right. Everyone wants to get rid of the dosa.
Yes.
Yes.
But if the lopa is there, that's not so bad, it seems.
We just get carried away by it. Then get unhappy when the dosa follows.
I don't think there's that many moments of just personal feeling. Like when you form a dhamma, that...
So it's almost hard to recognise that kusala moment because it's not so common, maybe.
It's not very common. So for most of them, for me, it's common.
Well, one thing a teacher in Thailand that was really good, not so much what he was, the technique he was teaching or the sender, but what he really impressed on me was the fact that the five aggregates are nothing desirable at all, that in their entirety they're not a thing to want to be attached to at all, so we should understand that even though we are attached to them, we should understand very clearly that the whole five aggregates is
how to understand
yeah.
This is more important than knowing that it's not what you said, not important?
Not desirable. Nothing good at all.
Yeah. We can say that.
But it's thinking.
Anyone can say that.
Anyone can say, I know.
That has a way to understand.
Okay. And one can say like that, but what about the attachment?
Oh, it's still there.
Yeah.
Even though we say it, it's still there, of course.
Yeah.
So it's
and yet we are so upset
good to accept
when it,
that
when it rots or when something goes wrong.
So people just copy Buddha's words only.
Yeah, being easy like, to repeat it, yeah. Like I just did, mm-hmm. but without real understanding of it.
Right.
Apart from right understanding of realities, is there any way to develop more detachment from the body so that we will be less distressed when we're sick or ill or dying or whatever?
Depending on different levels of understanding, that's all. If there is no understanding at all, no matter how much one wishes to have such
attachment.
Yeah, it's impossible. Yeah.
Just depends on understanding at different levels. So even though one's dying and one wishes that one was detached from the body, if there's no understanding, one will be attached, one will feel grief.
Wishing to be detached or not, just bring detachment. Useful when you reminded us, actually, when you were in Hong Kong, about how the body is like a snake, and sooner or later it will grasp. Every day you stroke it and you clean it and wash it and lotion it and look after it and nurse it and give it medicine and food and exercise it. But it's just a matter of time before it turns around and snaps or chokes you, even though you do all this work and go to all this trouble to look after it. And the reason for reminders like this is just to have more detachment, to see it as it is.
A person can become enlightened while saying like this or listening to all these words, depending on understanding.
So these words are very useful, aren't they? They seem to be.
It doesn't matter whether she said all these words or other words. It depending on understanding of realities, citta or cetasika or rupa. That's why when Buddha finished his teachings, many became enlightened. It depends on the development of understanding only.
Sorry?
I'm really grateful to you and Nina for pointing this out so well.
Otherwise, one limits one's understanding to a certain place and certain object only. With desire and attachment, not seeing attachment as attachment or hindrance of progress.
But I still feel that one, if one is in that place and one has some right understanding, one's heard good Dharma, there can still be kusala in those places too. Even though there may be kusala in daily life, there can still be kusala in those centres, depending if one has developed understanding.
What about this moment?
But what he's saying is if this moment happens to be in the...
Yeah, one happens to be in that
centre.
Yes, but what about this actual moment? Where are you?
Right.
See?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But if next moment he is in the temple, how about this moment?
If, yeah.
And if there is kusala, would it be because of or in spite of being there and following that practice?
This is true. This is the point. And I think it's only because of conditions I can see that. It's not because one is in
what
a center.
Do you think about the Buddha's time? And this time, because in the Buddha's time there is no samana meditation center
at all. But there are many, many monks, even though I know you will say that's different from lay people, that there are many, many monks.
Monks. Many, not all.
Not all, true. But
many leading quiet lives.
Because of their own nature,
yes.
Their accumulations.
But perhaps I am a person with those accumulations that likes those quiet places.
With no idea? Mixing?
Oh, yeah. But I have the feeling now that I've heard you speaking and read Nina's books, that I could... Before, I think I went to the meditation centres with the wrong idea, but now I feel perhaps if I did happen to feel I wanted a quiet place to go and I was there, that there wouldn't be wrong view and that perhaps kusala citta could arise as it could arise in daily life.
Is there any difference between having right understanding at the meditation center and at the holiday places? Samui.
Meditation center's cheaper.
Yes, the meditation center's cheaper. Two, there is a Dharma teacher there that maybe keeps reminding you about this Buddha's suttas and such like things so that you can hear Dharma more often rather than if you're at a holiday camp, you're seeing people running around in bikinis, people are drinking, there's all these sort of things going on that for someone that's accumulated a lot of akusala, a lot of tendencies to follow those sort of things, there's more possibility of one following
and
those.
Do you think that that is your real life? Keeping yourself in meditation center?
I wouldn't say keeping myself in meditation center, but I feel that what I feel is important in life now very much is hearing the Buddha's teaching, is reading the Buddha's teaching as much as possible. That's when I feel more comfortable, when I'm with people that are interested in the Buddha's teaching, rather than I don't feel so comfortable being around holiday makers that are just thinking of pleasure all the time.
Can you read at the meditation center?
I would pick one where I could read, yes. I was thinking of going down to Bhungan Janaram, and since I've been there before...
And can you read there?
Since I've been there before for a long, fairly long period, they would allow me to read, yes.
And to listen to radio program, or to do whatever you like?
No, not to do whatever you like, true. There is restrictions.
So... Is that your nature, to be under restrictions in order to know, to understand realities?
Okay, my ideal center would be somewhere where there's a teacher, where there's people that are practicing Dharma, where I could follow to a certain extent my inclinations, but where also there was some restrictions, so that if I felt like... running off with three women or something, at least I was restricted from that in some way. There is some use in having restrictions, I think.
What's the use?
The use is it's like a fence that it saves you from some of those dangers that because akusala is so strong, it's those places can save us from some of the bigger problems that akusala can cause, maybe.
The akusala, is it not our nature then, if we have strong akusala?
Yeah, but akusala can take us into very dangerous places.
Should it be understood and we be aware of it, or should it be pushed into dark corners? That's the effect of the restrictions, isn't it?
No, also, not necessarily, because say we're under the 8 precepts and we're not eating. Now, I've been to centres like that where you only eat in the morning. Okay, now, in the afternoon, there's definitely a feeling of discomfort. But that doesn't mean the akusala is pushed away. It just means that it's brought into focus and you can see there is really attachment.
What about when it's not rule, but there can be understanding of reality as naturally? Sometimes when you feel hungry and then you eat something...
No.
It's conditioned.
Yes.
Or trying to follow the rules, under the rule.
Yeah. I take your point. I think you can take it the wrong way. But I still like to be around people that are practicing Dharma anyway.
Wrongly?
This is a good point. This is...
Was there nice guys?
I like to spend my time somewhere that I can read and take a lot of knowledge, even among people who have wrong understanding. But it depends on the center itself, whether that center will accept you to do or to live that way.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel that way, that I would definitely prefer a center where it's not restrictive, or there's very few restrictions.
Because you see that they would say that, okay, you can stay here, you can do whatever you want, but still, if I have different ideas, I cannot say that what they are doing is right.
Yeah.
This is why I cannot get in any meditation center, because when I was invited to speak on Dharma, on the development of Eightfold Path, I don't mind what center is there or what rules they have. I just talk on the right path. And then I know that they cannot agree because they still have meditation center with rules. If it's said in Tipitaka, it's all right. But when it's not said in Tipitaka, something must be wrong. For sure. So what can you get from associated with wrong idea, wrong people?
You would say it's almost dangerous to be around those people.
Can you get some right understanding from the wrong practice?
It's almost a question of which is less dangerous, people well-intentioned but with wrong view, or ordinary people who have no interest, have a lot of kilesa, akusala, but do not put forward a wrong view,
they don't put forward philosophy
as being the right view.
I think wisdom will just have to sit on this.
Against the Eightfold Path, or not against the Eightfold Path?
Well, I'd like to think that they've got good points that are on the Eightfold Path too.
Not to know the reality of this moment?
Well, but some of them do seem to want to know the reality of this moment.
Why not developing in daily life? Then?
But some of them say develop in daily life too, but this is just more.
If they develop in daily life, they don't need to go anywhere. It's against the true understanding.
Very much. And reading Nina's articles and listening to her tapes when I get them. So we'll see.
I think one reason it can be frightening to say it's wrong is because it's like it's removing one's security blanket and or a large part of one's life or one's friendships. It's very appealing to have the same ideas as other people and live the same way of life, and it's very attractive. And it's much harder to stand on your own and go against the tide. So that's why it's frightening, I think.
But I don't think meditation's wrong.
Wrong meditation is wrong.
But I don't think meditation's wrong.
But wrong meditation is wrong.
What do you mean by wrong meditation?
Because I don't think watching TV is wrong either. But if you think TV is going to enlighten you, then you've got a problem.
Depends on the view of the people.
So I say I wouldn't go to a meditation center to meditate thinking that I was going to be enlightened. But if I went there and I did meditation, but was in the actions I'm doing there, if I did it in the same sense that I do any action like eating ice cream, if I'm trying to understand realities for what they
are. Right. Then I would say that that is not meditation center. No. Don't put any name on it as meditation center.
So I'd say I could go to a so-called meditation center,
it's not meditation,
but I'm not doing it in that sense. Yes. I'm not going along with the thought, I'm going to do this and achieve
it's
a certain...
It's like Samoy, it's like anywhere.
Ajahn, it's like going to a temple where people go through the ritual in the temple.
Yes.
And you can do the same thing, but you're not doing it with the ritual.
Yes.
You're doing it because of understanding.
But you know what's right and what's wrong.
Mm.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that you are afraid to understand what is right and what is wrong.
Mm.
But what he's saying is he can still go to the meditation center, he can still close his eyes, he can still look as though he's doing the same as other people, but inside he knows he
doesn't
have
the wrong
idea.
You mean that you follow? Or you
I think there's also a danger of saying that meditations... I think some people misunderstand what you say. I think that you would say it's okay to so-called meditate, but not with wrong understanding.
I do not agree with the word meditation center.
Yeah.
Because in the Buddha's time, there is no meditation center at all.
But if one felt inclined to meditate, just inclined to do it. They don't enjoy doing
where?
It. Well, that's like I enjoy eating ice cream. Yeah. So if I enjoy to sit with my eyes closed and even put my mind on the breath, but knowing that that is just an action like any other action, but the real understanding comes with awareness of reality.
Yeah. Of the present.
So with that understanding.
You mean that you close your eyes with right understanding?
Well, you would understand that that in itself is not a means for enlightenment.
All right, you can close
just
your eyes now.
I don't like to say that I would close my eyes with right understanding. Because
I can close my eyes now while I'm talking.
Mm.
With right understanding, I can do that.
Yes.
But I don't have to follow the understanding, the closing your eyes and then have such and such object. And then you again understanding.
I only hesitate to answer your question because when you say with right understanding, I sometimes hesitate to say that I have right understanding. I could say that I...
Without wrong view.
Yeah, I don't do it thinking it's going to enlighten me. Or that I'm going to have understanding.
But if you don't have understanding of the developing understanding of realities in daily life, then you would follow the meditation center's rules.
Yes.
And then when you have...
you will be influenced by what they say.
Certainly, yes. So if I'm closing my eyes with the thought that that is going to achieve understanding, that would be wrong understanding. But if I close my eyes, it's because I close my eyes.
So you can go to anywhere without the idea of meditation center.
Yes.
But so the question is, is it possible, as Ivan says for himself, to go to a meditation center, to close your eyes when everyone else closes your eyes, to concentrate on the breath when everyone else concentrates on the breath, but while they have wrong idea that this will lead to enlightenment for you or Ivan to have no wrong view, but just to follow along the motions because you find it quite pleasant, like eating nice food?
At the moment I'm following this wrong practice.
One did it thinking that it was going to achieve
because
the
when they close your eyes, you close your eyes. When they concentrate on breath, you concentrate on breath too. So it's not natural.
But you do.
There is no understanding that awareness is different from concentration.
No, I'm taking away from the belief it's going to get a result. I'm just saying it's something you like doing.
So you didn't gain any understanding.
You don't
just go for relaxation.
Relaxation
like yoga.
Like watching TV.
Like yoga.
So it's not Buddhist teaching.
Yes. No,
so
no, it's not Buddhist teaching.
So why do we say meditation center for people to think that that is the teachings of Buddha?
So why go there in the first place?
Yeah, just yoga.
No. I think people misunderstand what Ajahn's saying, that one in life, you can do anything. But you can do it either with wrong understanding or you can do it with right understanding.
Mm.
And you can actually meditate with right understanding.
Yeah.
Or you can do it with wrong understanding.
It's a bit like saying going to the movies but closing your eyes. I mean, the whole purpose of going to the movies is to watch the movie. So just like if you go to a meditation center, you don't go unless...
But you might find meditating pleasant to you, but you don't do it because it's going to. You don't do it because it's going to give you understanding and enlightenment. But we go to the trouble of doing many things.
As we don't say that movie theater is meditation center, we shouldn't call that place meditation center too. Otherwise, people will think that that is the teachings of Buddha.
Yes.
I think the
error is that people feel that when they go to do that, that they will grow in wisdom and understanding. And that's the error.
And they think that they will get some result too.
Right, right.
And they don't know what is meant by some result.
I suppose the other thing is that because we are so influenced by people around us, that even if we go just because it's a pleasant, relaxing place for us, if every day, all day, every day, other people are saying, oh, isn't it wonderful, this is getting result, and the teacher and the abbot is saying, oh, this will bring you this result, after a while, we're likely to question whether we're the only person with the right idea, or whether all this large number of people may be
so one's likely to lose confidence in what one knows.
But
to
we're
be
in
right.
the we're in the pressure also, just in daily life too. I mean.
But no one's saying, for example, like maybe all the people around us go to the bar, but they don't say go to the bar, it's going to make you enlightened. But if you would like to be enlightened, and everyone around says this is the way to enlightenment.
Yes, but also
it takes a lot
of religion. Our religion these days is that anything that feels good is what life's all about. The capitalist religion is this. It's life is to enjoy yourself, get as much out of it. So we do things for that purpose often. But, no, it's just that...
do you ever go to a meditation centre for enjoyment? For relaxing
and no, I wouldn't bother because I don't want to keep the company of those people because I don't think they've got anything to offer.
So what you're saying is not pleasant.
Meditation can be pleasant because it can go to jhanas if the right conditions are there.
And then one will become more attached to it.
Yes, I think so. Very much so.
So.
But I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that one can have accumulations to meditate.
And then one cannot find a way out.
Yeah, it could be a problem, yes.
But when you're saying it can be pleasant, that it can lead to jhanas, immediately then you have the idea of some result.
No, I think that's I think that's understanding that meditation is... I think it took me a while to understand that meditation does lead to jhanas, but it's not the direction that takes you to understanding. It's just another experience. It's something that seems like it has a great deal to offer you in your life.
They say while you're in the meditation center, and then when you leave, you should try. They encourage you to try.
So, what is the difference between meditation center and other places?
No difference.
No, yeah. They said that they need meditation center.
I think they say you need meditation because otherwise you would go there and they would say to you, do what you want to do, and if you feel like meditation, you can, or you can do something else, or you can read a book, or you do whatever you want to.
Yeah.
But they don't. They say, this ritual is what you need. And you go through a ritual.
But it is true. There is a possibility. It's a possibility. I've taken it as a ritual and been attached to it as a ritual.
Right.
You have to have good understanding.
And most people who have the understanding won't bother going to a meditation center because the people they associate with are not talking Dhamma. Oh, really? They're not. They're concentrating on meditating. That's why it's not.
What about the result, too, that the teacher has gained such and such level of understanding? See?
Okay, I'll meet some teachers and some people that go to centres, and they have an impressive aura of calm about them. Some of them. Is that just calmness? It's not.
Different stages of enlightenment too.
But
it looks like it's done something good for them. It looks like that.
Yeah, but you put someone in a very quiet place, no distractions, and everything's done for them.
Yeah.
You could be very calm too until something happens and agitates you.
That's true.
So, I mean, it can be a delusion. I'll bring up the situation with Ajahn. I remember many years ago, and this is before I did come back and listen to Ajahn for the second time, but I had a little place on Soy 51. And I think I can't remember if it was in Villa or in Tijai.
Fulan.
No, it wasn't Fulan. Anyway, I saw you once in the supermarket, and you were shopping in the supermarket. And the thing that I remember so clearly was that when she was shopping in the supermarket, she was as calm as when she was talking Dhamma in a group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that impressed me because it's one thing to be in a group and quietly talk Dhamma and be very nice. And it's another thing to be in the everyday world and to be at ease, really. And I think it's one thing to go to a place where everything's done for you and it's quiet and to seem very tranquil. It's another thing to get out in the world and stay tranquil.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a sutta where there were some monks who went off to the forest and they thought they were enlightened, and they came out and they saw a young
found that they weren't enlightened.
How do we know about the Abbas Chitta anyway?
Well, that's
someone looks so quiet and pleasant and serene. How do we know about the Chitta? Maybe there's attachment to looking so calm and serene. And,
well, that's true. I agree. I think Kusajan said that to me last week. I said, sometimes after a meditation retreat that I'd been on, I'd get out and feel quite good. And some people would say, oh, your face looks nice, your complexion looks very fine. And she said, but there could still be lobha there, because even with lobha, there's still a pleasant feeling and your complexion can look quite good, so you can't really be sure.
Right, my complexion was great in Samui, no problems.
So in order to know who knows the right path and who has right understanding, there is only one way that Buddha said in the Tipitaka by discussion.
But many teachers discourage discussion too, don't they?
So it's against the teaching.
I've never liked that. I've never been fond of those teachers that say, oh, look, don't worry with the question, just get back to the
practice.
I've really detested that.
When you go to the meditation center, what do they teach you?
Well, I've been to a lot of teachers.
So they all teach you something different?
Yeah.
But basically you've got to sit.
No, the one that I favour the most, Achan knows it quite well, is the Achan Nid method, where they don't encourage any position and they don't encourage you to sit for a long time. They just encourage you to note the four positions. And
Developing understanding of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting realities rather than sitting position. But they still keep, because it says in Tipitaka. But it does not conform with other parts of Tipitaka like Abhidhamma and Rupas. For example, there is no characteristic of sitting position, but there is characteristic of the four primary Rupas and other Rupa too. No sitting position, standing position. These positions do not have any characteristic at all. So I think that they are now having just more objects of understanding.
You think they're getting better, maybe a little bit from...
But still, it doesn't give more understanding of realities. Because they think that one will gain from meditating, concentrating, observing. But they don't help those who go to meditation center to have more understanding of the six doorways, because they concentrate on meditating rather than developing understanding from reading, discussing.
But what Robert says that he finds is that during the actual sitting, it's like it's one thing, which they call the practice with wrong view, but then the rest of the time it's like they can discuss Abhidhamma or discuss the details, but the point is they separate the theory from the practice. What I found is just amazing in these centres, how 1 minute they can be talking and encouraging complete wrong view to concentrate on an object, and then you can come out of that, be completely forgotten and be discussing the Abhidhamma in a useful, constructive way. But what he's saying is the discussion can be still be quite useful, he finds.
That's what I've always liked most about centers, is that at least you hear some Dharma.
If they do have right understanding, can they practice wrongly?
Well, not if it's very strongly.
If they do understand how to develop understanding of seeing and visible object, can they have wrong practice?
Not really.
So it means that they do not really have understanding of seeing as it is, and how to develop understanding of seeing and visible object as not self. Otherwise, the practice or the development of understanding would agree with what the Buddha taught.
But it seems to agree with Satipatthana, say. But
certainly,
you're saying it doesn't agree with Satipatthana and Abhidhamma and everything.
You cannot separate Satipatthana from Abhidhamma. Awareness is a reality.
Yeah.
Visible object is reality.
But talking about the positions is in the Satipatthana, and that practice.
Because
seems to
there is no understanding of rupa as rupa, not self. Because the rupa, which is sabhava rupa, must have its own characteristic. And if there is no four primary rupas, can there be any sitting position? So what is real? Is sitting position real, or the four primary rupas real?
Well, there's no argument that the four primary rupas are real. And sitting is thinking, but maybe it helps. It's thinking that helps direct to the one, directs one to the present moment where one can experience without thinking different subtle rupas or.
When you use the word maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Why
sure.
do you use maybe? Because there is no characteristic for understanding to understand? Or do you think that there is a characteristic that maybe there can be understanding of it?
Well, I think it's very much maybe because it depends on the understanding of the person.
No. The sitting position. Can there be the understanding, fully understanding of sitting position as not self? Or can there be more understanding of the primary rupas so that one will have less wrong view that it's me? Because you don't have to think when there is moment of experiencing hardness. Why? Because hardness is real.
You don't have to try and experience hardness.
It's real. And there is touching almost all day.
Yeah.
In the day. Many, many moments of touching. But some moments there is awareness and some moments there is no awareness. So right understanding begins to understand that this is moment with awareness and other moment is moment without awareness. This is right understanding. And you can tell too why it's moment with awareness.
And awareness knows that it's awareness.
Because it's the moment of beginning to understand that characteristic, which is hard, no body, no finger, no chair in it, in hardness itself.
Okay, because there's a feeling that there's no self at that time.
And that moment of experiencing hardness with the awareness and understanding, there is no sitting position.
True.
So, why there is no sitting position?
Because there's no self.
It's wrong or right to have no sitting position in one's mind at moment of experiencing hardness.
We were saying before that I think even though we experience hardness though, there can still be wrong view. It just depends. There may be hardness experienced with lopa, hardness experienced with wrong view, or hardness may be experienced as not self with panya.
Mm-hmm. So what can tell? Only right understanding.
Only right understanding can tell.
So if there is no development of right understanding of hardness and the experiencing of hardness, how can there be the eradication of self at moment of experiencing it? Instead of thinking of sitting position when there is no characteristic of sitting position at all. No sitting position rupa.
Yeah.
So it's not just because it's mentioned in Mahasatipatthana that one would watch the sitting position and make believe that it's not self or it's not me.
It's just
by
thinking.
Yeah.
What about in the Visuddhimagga it also says change of posture conceals suffering. There is a part in the Visuddhimagga. Okay. And so that when one is aware of suffering in the postures, then suffering is revealed. And that is in the Visuddhimagga too.
Because you think that is dukkha, which conditioned the changing of the body.
Mm.
But in reality, the bodily position hides the three characteristics, the arising and falling away, before you change. Now, rupa arises and falls away. You don't have to move or change at all. But when one changes position, one thinks that since one changes because of the dukkha,
yeah,
so what hides the dukkha, the characteristic of dukkha, which is the triple characteristic?
Wrong understanding.
The bodily position.
The bodily position.
Yeah, itself. Because it's the whole mass of rupa sitting.
Is that what that means?
Yeah. Not a particular rupa which appears for right understanding to see that when there is a moment of experiencing hardness, there is no other moment of seeing, hearing, smelling, thinking at all. And one will see that life exists only in a moment of consciousness only, in order to eradicate the idea of self from the whole mass of nama and rupa.
Yeah, I can see.
When one understands why it says about the bodily position in Mahasatipatthana, then one understands why the cause is included in Mahasatipatthana. Same purpose. No matter what is experienced, should be object of understanding in detail. Otherwise, many moments are skipped.
Why is the corpse included again? Just because of the attachment to the body as a self, or
what
something?
Concerns body is under the section of Kayanupasanasatipatthana. Because one is used to think of
a being.
Body, yeah.
Yeah, the way you teach and all that really does develop understanding of anatomy. I can see that for sure. I can see that that's the main thing, to keep this understanding of
Ajahn's teaching for me is through hearing and contemplating what she talks about, which is Dhamma. There's the opportunity to experience in any time in our life the reality that arises, and we can experience that even if you're meditating. It could help you to experience that reality that's there when you're meditating.
True.
Meditating cannot help you to experience reality in everyday life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's really the teaching of the Dhamma, so that at any moment, right now, or anywhere, no special place.
And Buddha taught for 45 years without encouraging anyone to go to meditation center, because there is no meditation center in Buddha's time. He knew better than anyone else in the whole world, in the universe. So why do people have set up new idea?
Time, it was a common thing for people to meditate. So he made mention of it because it was just a common thing to do?
Because meditation is not a place. Mm-hmm. It's a moment of considering Dhamma at different level of understanding.
Because there were certain words he used, wasn't it? When one... Rather than saying, he didn't say go and meditate, he tended to say when you were in this position to contemplate.
Already.
It's like as if it was a very common practice in those days, because it was within the religion of those days.
Whenever, wherever, because each moment is only reality.
It seems to me that when there is some understanding, even only in theory, but right understanding, even if only on a theoretical level, that there is no self that can control, one will have no desire or inclination to sit or do anything or to select.
But it can still be as a means of relaxation. You wake up in the morning, and rather than what rush off and go to town doing shopping or watching TV or something. You just sit quietly by yourself, and that's just naturally you can still do that, I think.
Is that before you practice? Or after?
Well, yes.
During.
We'll see if I'm still doing this in 10 years.
As you say, it just depends on the citta and the motivation, and in the end one can only know for oneself. So of course, yes, you can sit quietly. There's nothing wrong with sitting quietly. You can, you know, lie down in your bed quietly, or you can do anything. But I think one has to, in the end, be very honest with one's motivations.
That's what you've got to look at, the subtle motivations.
It's the citta in the end, not the outward appearance, but it's the citta. So yes, no one else is going to know. It's not the outward appearance or the...
If I hadn't heard all these teachings and read Nina's books, I've got no doubt that I would be practicing with the wrong view. You know, there would be definitely wrong view. So that's what I like about this teaching, the way you talk about the Abhidharma, and that it helps you to uncover the motivations, the subtle motivations.
The desire for results, desire for...
It seems so good to have those desires.
Not even enlightenment, but the desire to follow, well, to become a better person or for enlightenment is so strong that the things one will do can be very subtle to achieve that result. And I think it's very hard for people to accept that, because we're so used to trying to control our lives in all sorts of ways, it's very, very hard to accept that there is nothing we can do, that there is no one that can control this moment.
So we need to be reminded of that a lot.
And we'll see the value of the teachings. Otherwise, we'll sit and don't know about the teachings at all. Why did he teach for 45 years in detail?
Yeah.
Why in detail? See, because one cannot have such understanding by oneself without his teachings. So what is the real conditions for the development of right understanding? It must be intellectual understanding of realities of this world.
Reading, listening, and considering.
And in Thailand, as much as I know about meditation center, they urge people to come, just to come and follow the teachings, and then they will gain knowledge up to the Satipanna stage without any understanding of visible object and seeing. Just watch and say that it's nama rupa, not self.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of variation in the meditation centers and the quality of them, big differences.
They don't know the difference between mahakusala citta with right understanding, jnana sampayuttang, and mahakusala jnana vipayuttang at all.
Oh no, never heard that.
Yeah. So it does not agree with the teachings. They think that anyone can come and have something from meditation, and they take that for different stages of vipassanayana. No understanding of this moment of seeing.
Actually, you're very unusual for someone who goes to meditation centers to be interested in really exploring further at all.
That's always what's interested me right from the beginning. From the first thing, it's a study of the Dharma has always been the main thing. Meditation is just sort of teachers tell you to do that, so it seemed everyone was doing it.
It's easy to think that there is sitting position, but it's not easy to get rid of the idea of sitting position, because there is no reality of sitting position at all. There is only a moment of seeing, a moment of hearing, a moment of smelling, tasting, touching, thinking.
Thinking or knowing objects through the mind. It's not necessarily thinking.
What object is known through the mind?
Well, there's a lot of objects, and some of them can be such things as subtle movements.
No, I mean now. What they repeat comes from the book, but what appears now?
Thinking.
Can the mind or process experience visible object too?
Yes.
Can it experience sound?
Yes.
Can it experience smell?
Yes.
Taste?
Yes.
Tangible object? What else? No.
Subtle rhythm?
No. Not at all. What rupa?
Thing.
What rupa is the subtle rupa that you experience now? Besides these seven objects that Buddha told us that these seven objects are daily objects.
Yeah, those are the main ones that seem to appear, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Need we go any further?
Need we go any further, right. Okay.
As long as there is no understanding of these objects yet, should we think of other objects?
Got a good point there.
Because you see that the set apart for eye, visible object and seeing,
yeah.
One pair, rupa and nama,
right.
So sound and hearing,
yes.
And smell and smelling,
yes.
Taste and tasting, and tangible object and touching. So they cannot find what rupa is for mind or, so they say sitting position, standing position. They try to fit in rupa for mind or. They don't think of what they studied.
How did Ajahn Neb develop this method?
Sitting position.
Because she sort of, it was her method she developed, wasn't it?
It's in her book, in Sit,
yeah.
About the six pairs.
The six pairs, yes.
Yes, and what is the object, the rupa, which is experienced?
Through the mind,
and, yeah.
Sitting position.
See.
My major and minor positions.
Uh-huh.
Ajahn Neb, she was a teacher,
yes.
I remember meeting her with you.
But my teacher is Buddha and his teachings. Ajahn Neb helps me to understand Abhidharma. She's very keen.
Yeah, that's why I've been attracted to that, because they teach Abhidharma at the same time.
Mm-hmm. But by understanding Abhidharma, you know what's right and what's wrong.
So maybe Robert's example is, okay, this is a good example. You would go to Ajahn Neb's center, and a lot of what is taught is wrong, but actually on the Abhidharma details, even though to her it's all theoretical, but actually it helped you a lot to understand these details, and you were able to see that this should also be the practice. But like, you are very grateful that she introduced you to the Abhidharma and taught you all the details. So maybe Robert would say the same, even though some of the sitting and the ideas he can see are not right, but he hears a lot of Abhidharma details in between, and this is very useful,
yeah.
And he can consider those. So what's the difference?
But I have to be honest.
Yeah.
Very, very honest.
Yeah, I really am listening to this.
Yes.
Yeah.
To the teachings and to realities itself.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, right understanding cannot grow. It cannot become detached from wrong view of having sitting position, because no matter what we read from Tipitaka, Sutta, or Abhidhamma, or Visuddhimagga, or anywhere, there is no characteristic of sitting position, while there is characteristic for each rupa.
There is characteristic on Vayyo, though. Vayyo Datta.
Yes, but it's not sitting position.
But it's mentioned in the commentary to the Satipatthana. Maybe that's what I feel when I'm
all right. Vayyo is Vayyo, Dhamma is Dhamma. Dhamma is not sitting, Dhamma is not Robert. Vayyo is Vayyo, Vayyo is not sitting.
Yeah.
If there is no Vayyo, can there be sitting position?
Uh-huh.
If sitting position is real, there is sitting position even there is no Vayyo Tattu.
Okay.
Okay.
But you were sensible enough that when you went to the center, that even though you heard a lot of things were not right, you were able to extract the things that were useful and right and appreciate them, and then on your own study more. But you're always very grateful that they introduced you to these details. Maybe Robert is also sensible enough to turn a blind eye to the things that are not right and extract the useful things and take it away and consider it more and bring it here for discussion. But what you're saying is, once you realize that the not so useful things are not so useful, then you wouldn't even bother to go at all.
Otherwise, I wouldn't even.
I'm just saying you're very appreciative of how Ajahn introduced you to the Abhidharma. Maybe.
But many people went to meditation center like Ajahn Nath's meditation center, for example, Kundung did. And many people who later on listen to the radio program, and they can tell. What is the right development to understand reality of this moment?
But maybe they're very grateful that Ajahn Neb sent in, introduced them to the Abhidharma.
They can be eluded by that, because that aspect does have make a lot of sense. So if she says this is this way from Dhamma, and you believe, yes, it is this way, then you can follow something that's not correct, which can delude you and not help you to understand better. But there is a question probably that someone from a meditation center would ask, and that is that a person who does meditation tends to think that the reason they do it is because in that position of meditating, they are more receptive mental state to be able to experience the realities.
Is there no clingy, subtle one,
no,
a gross one? And how can there be the eradication of that attachment? Is there any way?
Understanding.
Yeah.
Understanding.
Why not develop it from now on? Because it's very difficult to develop the understanding that can eradicate attachment. As we talk about from the very beginning, there were many moments of lopa in the day. Who knows that it's a reality? And one wish to understand other reality rather than understanding lopa. So can that be moment of eradication of lopa, when there is no understanding of lopa at all?
There's not even the recognition of lopa.
Yeah, trying to avoid it, not having it, stopping it, calm it down.
Cutting it down.
Doing anything to.
Instead of recognizing.
Yeah.
That's what we tend to do. We tend to try and eradicate rather than recognize.
Well, that tends to be the habit of most of us, especially in the West. We tend to think Dhamma is about eradicating, not understanding, not seeing.
So this is a crucial point. We're not trying to eradicate lopa. We're trying to recognize it, understand it as just none.
If you eradicate, you
understand any reality, because all realities have the same characteristic.
Including lopa, because we overlook lopa a lot.
If you eradicate, you would never be able to understand it. You never see it for what it is.
All right. Now there is seeing. And if there is no understanding of seeing of this moment as just a reality, can there be less attachment to seeing as I see? So whenever there is lopa and there is no understanding of that characteristic of lopa as just a reality, can there be detachment from lopa?
You have to recognize it first. That's the first step.
There should be understanding of all realities as only different realities. No one, no being at all.
You want to talk about subtle things, you talk about subtle lopa.
Yeah.
Well, when you sit in meditation, you tend to think that you don't have aversion, you don't have love, just quiet. But actually, it's there. We're not seeing it.
And you're not recognizing it at all.
You're not recognizing it at all. It's rising yours.
This is good, because I really haven't heard this so much before at all about this subtle way. And I can see it's true to me.
One of the features of so-called meditation is that it's supposed to encourage certain kinds of mental states to the exclusion of other kinds of mental states. So it's like one is wanting to have the wholesome mental states. One doesn't want to see the unwholesome ones, because then the meditation not being successful. So it's not conducive to being directly honest. Just looking marked as fake.
That's what's interesting about New Zealand and Bangkok. When you're in New Zealand, you've got all that love for that beautiful stuff. You do, it's okay.
You're subtly attached to it, you don't even recognise it at all.
Well, you see, because you know, come up here, you get all this aversion. You think, oh, it must be horrible, this dreadful up here, because you know, I've got all this aversion. You get back to New Zealand, it's all very nice and beautiful and lovely. You know, that lover is there. It's
But what about Lopa now? Even it's not New Zealand's landscape.
Lopa to see, hear, and smell, and taste.
Those who develop Samatha Bhavana understands that after seeing this Lopa,
they understand.
Otherwise, they cannot develop more and more Kusala Citta, that the tranquility can appear as different stages of concentration. Because you see that when they use the term concentration, people think that by focusing on an object, then the mind is concentrated, but they think that that is tranquility. But those who know the difference between akusala, lopa, after seeing and experiencing objects through different doorways, and they know that akusala can arise by pondering, considering of the objects that condition kusala citta to arise more often. And by having sati and sampajanya, they know when citta is akusala and when citta is akusala, the five hindrances, nivarana dhamma. So by knowing so, they have vitakka and vichara on the object of samatha bhavana more often, that the hindrances cannot have condition to arise in between. And by having the mind be kusala so long, then the tranquility appears to become different stages of tranquility with concentration. But people just use the term concentration. They cannot see the difference between tranquility, which is kusala, which condition the appearance of tranquility as different stages of concentration. They just use the word concentration. So they think that they should concentrate only on the object. And they don't know when the mind is kusala and when the mind is akusala, because the lack of sati, awareness, and sampajanya, and right understanding of that level. For example, now, the kusala citta and akusala citta arise alternately. Who knows? Panya with awareness can know, but lopa cannot know, akusala cannot know. So by having accumulation of understanding of different akusalas after seeing and hearing so forth, and the understanding of how to develop more kusala citta, those people can develop samatha bhavana correctly, not just concentrating with desire on an object without any understanding at all, with lopa instead of mahakusala yana sampayutta, kusala citta accompanied by right understanding. But still, there can be attachment, even if it's
kusala.
Tranquil.
Even it's kusala.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the only way to eliminate attachment is having understanding of realities as only different realities.
Not self.
Not self.
Vipassana, in other words.
Vipassana, stipatthana, the only way.
I better get a copy of this study.
Right. I think you need to listen to that bit a dozen times.
That's really excellent.
But they know that after the seeing all the visible object, they know that it's kusala or akusala just by thinking only, not by any understanding of the reality. Is that right?
People have different kinds of akusala. They have lobha, and they have dosa, and they have mana, conceit, and they have other akusala reality. But panya, which has accumulated, can arise and see the danger of akusala. For some people who have accumulated panya enough, there can be moments of panya which understands the danger of lobha and akusala. But for many, many people, they don't have even accumulation to even think of studying or understanding akusala as akusala. So how can they see the danger of akusala? They can talk about the danger of akusala for years, but it doesn't mean that they really see the danger of akusala when it arises. So there are many different levels of understanding.
What is the link or the connection between moments of samatha in daily life that we were discussing earlier with, for example, breath or death as the object, and this development that some people maybe had accumulations for, as you were explaining, by understanding the moments of kusala and akusala after seeing enough, so that eventually there are such long periods of no akusala? What is the link? Is there a connection?
One thing after seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and people are different by accumulation. That's why we have different thoughts. You may think of teaching. I think of something different. And an architect can think of many things in different. But when there is understanding of reality as kusala and akusala, for example, while you are thinking of teaching, do you know that that moment is akusala?
Sometimes, mostly not.
See, so it needs accumulation for understanding reality of that level to understand that thinking of anything, concept of any knowledge.
When you say understanding of that level, you're talking about understanding at a level of satipatthana, or understanding at a level of samatha, or conventional
understanding. Intellectual understanding.
Intellectual understanding.
Yeah. Many levels of understanding. That's why that person herself knows what level of understanding. For example, those who develop samatha would know, if he has accumulation, to understand that it's not the way to eradicate wrong view. It's only moments of having more kusala. And still, there are conditions for akusala anytime. So that is not the past.
And still must know clearly what is kusala and what is akusala. Because obviously, if you're taking the subtle lobha for being kusala, then it cannot be understanding even at the level of samatha. So the characteristic has to still be clear. Are you talking about this? For example, if someone has accumulation for that kind of understanding, are you talking about it also in daily life?
Yes.
And then what would you say the object of samatha would be? Just dhammas? Dhammas?
Metta.
Metta. Dhamma,
Garuna.
Metta.
Any object of samatha. But that person
or
can...
Or reflecting on dharma. That's
an object
of samatha.
So if it's reflecting on this is kusala citta, or that was akusala citta, or that was, that could be dhammas.
For example, we can talk about the virtues of Buddha, his great compassion. But at moment of being aware and understand reality, to understand his great compassion better? Just considering his teachings only, or to directly experiencing reality which appears?
That's the highest way of understanding.
So there are many levels of understanding. At level of intellectual only, or at level of samatha, or at level of sthipatthana.
So what you're saying is even the development of karmas or samatha are many moments of wise reflection, so that there is no akusala or a stretch
at level.
At that level.
Yeah, only that level. We might have developed a great deal of samatha bhavana in previous lives. What about this life? It's completely gone by conditions. There are lots of lobha and dosa and ignorance still. If we still continue on developing samatha without developing vipassana in daily life, it must be the same as previous lives. Those who had attained jhana up to arupa jhana still were born again and again in the five khandas world, having ignorance, having lobha, dosa, and all akusala over and over again. So the best thing is to develops the sthipatthana in the life that one can have understanding of sthipatthana developed.
But you could say that, for example, the satipatthana that is developed, I mean, the same thing, end of the life, completely gone, but maybe conditioned for more understanding in the next lifetime or the lifetime after next. Couldn't you say the same about people who have developed a lot of calmness, when you say completely gone, but isn't it a condition for more kusala in other lives?
That's why people are different in detail. But one can see that no matter how much there is calmness or tranquility, without any understanding of reality, there is no way out.
How can you say what you mean without any understanding of reality as not self? Because of course there is understanding of reality as of kusala and akusala, but not as
Some would say that when he has akusala, he recites sutta
to get rid of the akusala.
Why not being aware? So it depends on understanding. If he has accumulation to be aware instantly, he doesn't have to think of reciting sutta.
Actually, that's a good point, because often we say that the most important thing is to develop understanding of our lives, but actually often what we're really most interested in is a way to get rid of the akusala, the dosa, especially, as you said.
That's true.
And that's why often people, maybe when they have a problem or difficulty in their life, they may be very interested in the Dharma, but when the problem disappears and their life is going smoothly and comfortably, then they lose their interest, because actually there's not enough confidence in the value of just understanding realities. You know, really they were more concerned to find a way to get rid of the unpleasant things. So once that was achieved, then
instead of minding about other akusala, why not pay attention to ignorance itself? Because it's the cause of all akusala. When one develops panya, panya eliminates ignorance, which is the cause of all other akusala.
How do we pay attention to ignorance?
Having more understanding of nama and rupa, having more understanding of nama and rupa intellectually, and continue on with awareness. People only think of having less lobha and less moha. What about less avijja? If In order to have less lopa and less dosa, there must be less avicca first.
But in order to
and less wrong view.
In order to be less avicca first, there has to be knowing that there is avicca.
Mm-hmm. Avicca is able to understand this moment. Avicca cannot.
Even though one tries to understand this moment, avicca is here.
That's why one has to question meditation.
Yeah, I see why.
Because avicca doesn't matter. You can sit there as long as you sit there till you die.
It's for ignorance.
Early conviction in this section.
Actually, the tapes are very useful to listen to.
I'll have to. It's always seemed to me that there's been more panya arising when I've been studying the teachings or listening to a teacher. That is the way it has seemed to me.
It's dhamma, musati, to recollection on the teachings. With understanding, not reciting.
With understanding.